Welcome back. You've been really into bees lately, like really curious about how they're handling, all the changes with the climate, right? Especially
Sure.
with finding food.
Yeah.
Well, you are in the right spot today because we're going all the way to southern Sweden,
Okay.
Götaland to be specific.
Great.
We're looking at how a couple bee species and the plants they just love
Yeah.
are keeping up in a warming world.
Got it.
And to help us with this deep dive,
Okay.
we have a true expert in ecology and climate change.
Oh, wow.
Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So we're going to be looking at this study from 2024
Okay.
from the European Journal of Entomology.
Palmer.
It's called Using Citizen Science Data to Compare Flight Phenology of Two Oligolectic Bees, Hymenoptera and Drenidae, with the flowering of their host plants.
Tetchy.
So
Yeah.
before we get into all the specifics, can you just give us the kind of the big picture? Why is this study so interesting?
Well, this study is asking a big question. As the climate warms up, will these bees be able to, stay synced up with their food sources?
Oh, interesting.
With the plants. It's all about timing, right? Will the plants be blooming when the bees need them to be?
So I'm guessing that means these bees are probably pretty picky eaters.
You are right. They are picky. These two species, Andrina hatterfiana and Andrina marginata, they are what we call oligolectic.
Oligolectic. What is that?
It means they're specialists, so they only collect pollen from a very, very limited number of plants.
Got it.
So yeah, not just any flower will do.
Okay, I got it. So Andrina hatterfiana,
Yeah,
is that the picky one?
particularly picky. Relies almost exclusively on a plant called field scabious, or if you want to be fancy, Gnatia arvensis.
I don't want to be
All
fancy.
right. Field scabious.
Andrina
Yeah.
marginata has a slightly more broader palette, I guess.
Visiting both field scabious and another plant called devil's bit scabious.
Devil's bit scabious.
Yeah, for all the science folks out there, it's Tsetseza pratensis.
Okay, now these plants,
Yeah.
they're both important for the
Yes.
grasslands, right? In southern Sweden.
Yes, and they tend to they flower kind of late in the season,
Got it.
relatively late.
Okay, so we have our picky eaters and their preferred menu. Now, these are both solitary bees, right?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is an interesting detail. I'm not sure why, but it is. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, that's important. It means they don't live in big colonies like honeybees, you know? So these solitary bees, they overwinter as adults, like all tucked away, until it's time to emerge and start the whole, foraging breeding cycle.
So they've got to be quick, get it all done in that flight period, right?
Yes, exactly.
And this is where the citizen science comes in.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, so this study relies on a really cool resource. It's called ARTPORTLAN.
Artportulin.
It's the Swedish Species Observation System. It had over a decade of observations from people all over the country. They've been tracking when and where these bees are active and when those important plants are, in bloom.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Citizen science is really like a game changer, right? For
Absolute.
this kind of research.
It allows researchers to get data that would be impossible to get otherwise, and it gets people involved.
But I mean, I'm sure there are some challenges.
Yeah, of course. You always have to think about potential biases, maybe in where people are making observations and the possibility of misidentifications, things like that. But the researchers in this study, they were very aware of those limitations and they tried to account for them.
That's good.
Yeah.
So we've got our picky bees, we've got the plants they love, we've got all this citizen science data, and we've got the big question of climate change. So
Sure.
what did they find? Like, did the bees' flight periods and the flowering times, like, did they line up?
So when you look at all 11 years of data together, generally good news.
Okay, good.
The flight periods for both bee species did overlap with the flowering periods of their host plants.
That's a relief. But I mean, with this study, I bet it's not that simple.
Yeah, you're right. There's a little more to it. When you look closer at the timing, things get more nuanced. Remember, field scabious starts flowering like a month earlier than devil's bit scabious? Well, Andrina hatterfiana also starts its flight period about a month earlier
Oh, so they're
than
following.
Andrina marginata.
They're following the same kind of
Yes,
pattern.
exactly. But here's where it gets a little tricky. because Andrina marginata emerges later, right?
Right.
It might miss out on Field scadius in some years.
Oh, no.
If the plants are done flowering before, you know, Andrina marginata wakes up, it's going to be a problem.
That's a problem. So even though, like, the overall timing kind of matches up, the specific timing could create a mismatch.
Could.
And for a bee that's that picky, that can't be good.
No, not good. But worth noting, though, the flowering periods for both plants, they're actually much longer than the bee's flight periods.
Oh, okay.
So that gives them a little, you know, wiggle room.
Okay, so there's a little buffer there.
Yeah.
Built in.
Exactly.
Okay. So now I'm curious about, you know, how temperature fits into all this. That's what we really want to know, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's where the study really gets interesting.
Ah.
And it starts to show some potential challenges.
Okay.
So what's fascinating here is that they found that only Andrina hatterfiana and its preferred plant, the Field scabious, they consistently shifted to earlier activity periods in warmer years.
So both the bee and the plant,
both of them,
are reacting the same way to the warmer weather.
Exactly. But this was not the case for Andrina marginata.
Okay.
And Devil's Bit scabies.
Oh, interesting. So they didn't change.
Yeah. They didn't show the same shift.
Wow. Why do you think that is?
It's tough to say for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe Devil's Bit scabies is just less sensitive to temperature.
Okay.
When it comes to flowering. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe it relies more on like day length.
Oh, okay.
Or other environmental cues.
Interesting.
And as for Andrina marginata, we need more research to understand, you know, why it's not shifting as temperatures rise.
So we're kind of starting to see, like, some cracks, right, in that synchronized dance between these bees and the plants.
Exactly.
So what could this mean in the big picture of climate change?
So that's a big question.
Mm.
It leads us to three potential scenarios, right?
Mm-hmm.
As the climate changes.
Yeah.
Both the bee and the plant could shift together.
Okay.
One could adapt to match the other, or they could become totally out of sync.
And we're kind of seeing that, right? Our two pairs might be on different paths.
Yeah.
Andrina hatterfiana and Field scabious seem to be, you know, shifting together.
Together.
But what about Andrina marginata?
Right.
And Devil's Bit scabious?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, what happens if they, like, fall out of sync?
That's the question. I mean, it's a big worry for both species.
Yeah.
If the bees, if they come out too late to catch the flowers, they've got nothing to eat.
Right.
And if the plants aren't pollinated, they can't reproduce. It's a lose-lose.
So this, like, small shift in timing could have, like, much bigger effects on the whole ecosystem.
Absolutely.
And it's not just temperature.
Right.
Like, rainfall could change. Day length could change.
Exactly. All sorts of things can disrupt those relationships.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it's a complex web. And climate change is kind of throwing a wrench in it.
It is.
Yeah. This study just shows how more we need to learn about how climate change is affecting these partnerships in nature.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing that, like, regular people, you know, everyday people with their curiosity and their smartphones are helping us understand these changes.
I know. Citizen science is really changing the game. It lets researchers gather data on a massive scale.
Yeah.
And it gets people involved in scientific discovery, which is so cool.
Speaking of the study, you know, you mentioned that Andrina hatterfiana's flight period got shorter in warmer years.
Right.
And but both plants, both Field scabious and Devil's Bit scabious flowered for longer. That seems kind of counterintuitive. Yeah. Why would that be?
You're right. It is interesting. It suggests that even though both Andrina hatterfiana and Field scabious are shifting earlier, right, because of the warmer temperatures, they might be responding at slightly different rates.
So, like, Field scabious is getting a head start.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that shorter flight period for Andrina hatterfiana could mean it has less time to collect all that pollen.
Right.
That it needs to, you know, provision its nests and feed its young.
So a longer flowering period for the plant, like, maybe it's using more energy without actually getting pollinated more often?
Exactly. Exactly.
So it kind of highlights how even when there is this general overlap, there's still potential for these mismatches. It's like a dance, but the partners are, like, stepping on each other's toes.
Yeah. I like that.
And this is just one study looking at two bee species and their plants in one part of Sweden.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up this first part of our deep dive, Yeah.
What's the big takeaway for our listener? What's the, like, so what of all of this?
I think first and foremost, this study really shows how everything in nature is connected. You know, like, these bees, their lives are completely tied to the flowering of specific plants.
Yeah.
And messing with these relationships can have big consequences, you know, maybe consequences we don't even think about.
It's a reminder that, you know, those partnerships,
yeah,
they're fragile. And as the climate keeps changing, they're probably going to face a lot more challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to keep, like, watching these changes, yeah, and thinking about how we can lessen the impact of climate change.
And that's where our listeners come in.
Exactly.
Even small things like planting a pollinator-friendly garden,
yeah,
or supporting research on climate change, mm-hmm, can make a difference.
Yeah, we can all do our part, you know, to help these pollinators, right, and their plants adapt to a changing world.
And remember, this was all citizen science data.
Yeah. So you can be part of the solution. You don't have to be a scientist to, you know, make a difference.
No, not at all. Oh. Just observing and reporting what you see,
yeah,
in your own backyard, you know, can help scientists,
yeah,
figure out how these complex relationships are changing. You might even discover something new.
Exactly. The world of bees and plants is full of surprises, right?
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
There's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
And every observation helps us get closer to understanding these creatures and their role in, you know, our ecosystems.
That's what I love about science.
Yeah.
It's a constant journey of discovery.
That's so true. So today we've learned about, you know, the lives of these two bee species,
mm-hmm,
how much they depend on those specific plants,
yeah,
and how climate change could really mess up their, like, perfectly timed dance. And all this is thanks to those researchers,
yeah,
and the citizen scientists.
Yes. Really a great example of how collaboration,
yeah,
and curiosity, you know, can drive scientific understanding,
yeah,
and conservation.
Absolutely. Amidst all these insights, I'm kind of wondering about something.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about how Andrina Hadafiana seems to be adjusting to the warmer temperatures.
Yeah.
But what about Andrina marginata?
Right.
What if its main food source,
yeah,
Devil's Bit Scabious, starts blooming when it's still, you know, tucked away for the winter?
Yeah.
Is that, like, a recipe for disaster?
That's the question, isn't it?
Huh.
I mean, this study doesn't really give us a clear answer.
Okay.
But it does bring up some interesting possibilities.
Like what? Like, could Andrina marginata, could it adapt and, like, start emerging earlier?
I mean, that's one possibility. Maybe there are other cues besides temperature, you know, that trigger its emergence.
Right.
Could be something like day length or moisture levels, or who knows?
Yeah.
We need more research to understand what's telling this bee,
yeah,
when it's time to, you know, wake up and get going.
So there's a chance it could adjust, like, its schedule,
yeah,
and not totally miss out on its food.
There's hope, but we also have to think about the possibility,
yeah,
that it might not be as adaptable as Andrina hadafiana.
Right.
And if that's the case, you know, a mismatch with Devil's Bit Scabious,
yeah,
could be a real problem for its survival.
Yeah. It makes you think about how, you know, climate change could create, like, winners and losers,
yeah,
in nature.
Absolutely.
Some species can roll with it and some can't.
Yeah. And we can't forget that these changes,
yeah,
in timing, they're not happening in isolation.
Yeah.
Right. They have impacts on the whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, everything from pollination to food webs, it all affects the planet's health.
It's a sobering thought, but it also feels like a call to action, you know? The more we know about these relationships,
yeah,
the better we can protect them.
I agree. And citizen science is so valuable,
mm-hmm,
for getting that knowledge.
Yeah.
If we keep observing and reporting what we see,
yeah,
we can give scientists the data they need to track these changes,
mm-hmm,
and figure out, you know, how to protect them.
So to our listener who loves bees so much,
yes,
keep exploring. Pay attention to the bees in your garden. See when the flowers are opening.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how those things are changing.
Yeah. Your observations,
yeah,
no matter how small,
yeah,
can help us figure out how climate change is impacting the world.
If this deep dive has, like, sparked your curiosity, I encourage you to, you know, explore more. There's so much information out there.
Tons.
About bees and plants, and there are tons of ways to get involved in citizen science projects.
Yeah, you might be surprised at what you find.
Yeah.
And how much of a difference you can make.
Speaking of discoveries,
yeah,
I think it's time to kind of shift gears a little,
okay,
and look at something really interesting that came up in this study. Remember how we were talking about Andreina had her Fiona?
Yeah.
And how its flight period was getting shorter in warmer years? And both field scabious and devil's bit scabious seem to have longer flowering periods.
Yep.
Well, the researchers took a closer look
at
those shorter flight periods.
For the Andreina had her Fiona.
Yeah.
Okay.
What they found is fascinating and could really impact how well this bee can, you know, reproduce.
I'm all ears. What did they find?
Well, it turns out that in those warmer years, not only was Andreina had her Fiona's flight period shorter, but the number of days that the females were actually out and about looking for pollen also decreased. They need that pollen, right, to stock their nests and feed their offspring.
Oh, wow. That's big. So even though Andreina had her Fiona and field scabious seem to be shifting together, those shorter foraging periods, that could still be a problem.
Yeah. It's like they're winning the timing battle, but they're losing the resource war.
Exactly.
Fewer foraging days means fewer offspring, right?
Probably.
Which could ultimately affect the long-term survival of the species.
Yeah. It just shows how complex these interactions are and the subtle ways climate change can really mess them up. It's not just about overlap. It's about all the little details of timing and resources.
It's a perfect example of why we need to keep monitoring and researching, you know, keep learning and updating our knowledge.
As we go.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe our listener out there watching bees in their own yard will be the one to make the next big discovery.
I love that.
So we've reached the end of our deep dive into bee phenology and climate change.
It has been a fascinating journey.
We've covered a lot today. From those picky eaters, to the plants they love, to the power of citizen science, and the challenges that are ahead.
Yeah, and I hope our listener learned something about these amazing creatures.
Me too.
And the complex ways they're adapting to a changing world.
And remember, you know, even though this deep dive is over, your exploration doesn't have to end.
Exactly.
There's a whole world out there.
A whole universe.
Waiting to be discovered.
Yeah.
And every single one of us can be part of that.
I agree.
So, to our listener, keep asking questions, keep your eyes open, and keep exploring. We'll see you next time for another deep dive into the natural world.
Until then, I'm all ears. What did they find out about those shorter flight periods?
So in those warmer years, it wasn't just that Andreina had her Fiona's flight period was shorter.
Uh-huh.
The number of days that the females were actually like out foraging for pollen also went down.
Oh, wow.
And they really need that pollen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To stock their nests.
Right. To build up those nests and feed the kiddos.
Exactly.
So even though they seem to be shifting together, you know, Andreina had her Fiona in the field, scabious.
Right.
Those shorter foraging periods could still, like, really impact the population.
Yeah. It's like winning the timing battle, but losing the resource war.
You know, if you have fewer foraging days,
right,
it probably means fewer offspring.
Yeah.
And that could have long-term effects on the survival of the species.
Yeah. It really does show how complex these interactions are.
Yeah.
And how, like, even subtle changes with the climate can throw things off.
It's not just about, like, you know, do they overlap or not?
Yeah, no, it's
really those finer details.
The details, the timing.
Yeah.
And the resources.
That's why we gotta keep
watching.
Yeah, watching and researching.
Mm-hmm. Keep learning.
Yeah, keep learning and updating.
As new information.
Yeah, as we get more information.
Those out, yeah.
And who knows, maybe our listener out there, you know, watching their bees will be the one to make that next big discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
It all comes back to observation.
Yeah.
And you know, citizen science is just such a powerful tool.
It
you know, because every little observation, every bit of data.
Every bit, yeah.
It helps us, you know, build that
bigger picture.
Yeah, build that understanding.
Yeah, the puzzle.
Of how all these changes are affecting the planet.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle. We're putting the pieces together.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
It is.
Bit by bit.
Yeah, bit by bit.
So are you ready to kind of move on to a different...
Yeah, I think it's time to switch gears a little bit.
Okay. All right.
And look at something that I thought was particularly interesting that popped up in the study. Uh-huh. You know, earlier we were talking about Andreina had her Fiona's flight period getting shorter in warmer years.
Yeah.
And how both scabious and devil's bit scabious, they both seem to flower for longer.
Yes. Yes.
Well, the researchers actually, they kind of dug a little deeper into those shorter flight periods.
For the Andrina Herofiana.
Yeah. What they found is really fascinating and could have major implications for the bees, you know, success at reproducing.
I'm eager to hear more. What did they find? I'm eager to hear more. What did they find?
So it turns out that in those warmer years, it wasn't just that the flight period was shorter, but the number of days that the females were actually out, you know, foraging for pollen also went down. So, you know, they need that pollen to
build up those nests.
Yeah, stock their nests, feed the offspring.
Yeah, to feed their little ones.
Right, exactly.
So even though, you know, they're both shifting earlier,
right,
the bee and the plant, those shorter foraging periods, that's still a big deal.
Yeah, it's like they might be winning that timing battle.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're losing the, you know,
the resource war. Yeah.
Fewer foraging days, you know, probably means fewer offspring.
Yeah, I would think so.
And ultimately that could affect how well they survive long term.
Yeah, it really highlights just how complex these interactions are.
Yeah.
It's fascinating and kind of scary at the same time.
It is.
Like climate change can really mess things up.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, as simple as do they overlap or not.
No, it's those little
details.
Yeah, those fine details, the timing and the resources and
I think that's a good example of why we just, you know,
Keep going.
We got to keep at it.
Keep researching.
Yeah, keep learning and updating what we know.
Absolutely. And as we get more data, as we learn more.
And who knows? Maybe our listener, you know, out there observing bees.
I know.
Maybe they'll be the one.
Yeah, that would be so cool to make that next big discovery.
I love it.
Yeah.
Citizen science for the win.
Citizen science, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all about observation. You know, that's
really what it comes down to.
It is.
You know, every little observation.
Every single one.
It helps us put together that
bigger picture.
That bigger picture.
That puzzle.
You know, how are things changing? How is this affecting, you know, the planet as a whole?
It's like a big puzzle.
Yeah.
And we're just putting it together.
It is. It's a good analogy.
Yeah.
The puzzle.
Bit by bit, piece by piece.
Piece by piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've reached the end
of our
deep dive.
Level it down.
Into bee phenology and climate change.
Yeah.
We covered so much today.
Yeah, you did.
You know, from picky eaters and their favorite plants.
Yeah.
To citizen science and the challenges that might be ahead.
All the challenges.
Yeah.
It was a great journey.
It was.
And I hope our listener, I hope they really, you know, got a sense of these amazing creatures.
I hope so too.
And all the complex ways that they're adapting to this changing world.
Yeah. And even though our deep dive is over, the exploration, you know,
doesn't have to end.
It doesn't have to end.
There's a whole world out there.
A whole universe of knowledge.
Yes.
Waiting to be discovered.
Absolutely.
You know? And everyone
can be
play a part in that.
Part of the process, yeah.
So to our listener, keep those questions coming. Keep looking around.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah.
And keep exploring.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive.
We will. See you later.
Bye.